Insights for the UK startup scene from a leading tech entrepreneur. Welcome to the Better Boards podcast series. Thank you for listening to the Better Boards podcast series in these extraordinary times. I'm Sabine Demkowski, founder and managing partner of Better Boards. Our mission at Better Boards is to contribute to creating better boards. We do this by providing our clients with an evidence-based approach for board evaluations and board development programs. To fulfill our mission, we give a voice to all who care about creating better boards. Every first and third Thursday of the month, I speak with those that are serving on boards. All the views expressed in our podcasts are the views of our podcast partners and not those of Better Boards. In this episode, I'm delighted to talk with Anthony Rose. Anthony is a serial entrepreneur and the man behind the BBC iPlayer. Anthony has founded and sold multiple startups. He's co-founder and CEO of Seed Legals, the world's first legal automation platform for startup funding. In less than 3 years, Seed Legals has become the largest closer of funding rounds in the UK. Welcome, Anthony.
Anthony, thank you so much for making time for this podcast. I'm sure the startup community in the UK will very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
Because of your latest startup, Seed Legals, you very much have the finger on the pulse on the startup scene in the UK. What impact did the outbreak of the virus had on the startup scene?
So that is a very good point, and I think there are several aspects to it. One, of course, people can see in the future, for some companies, they've got severe pivoting that they need to do. Anyone that's doing location-based events or travel has got some serious rethink. Others, as one company that wrote to me that says, we're doing med tech around detection of rare diseases, and we have no problem finding investment. So I think number one is companies need to rapidly conserve cash to prolong run rates. Even companies that don't have immediate cash issues need to make sure that they can survive a lot longer because funding might be difficult in the medium term. Secondly, companies are very much hurting because of an immediate reduction. And I've gotten many incomings from developers, marketing people and others who've suddenly been made redundant and are looking for work. On the funding side, what I'm seeing, which is quite interesting, is that some investors are pulling out, some are not, but companies are rapidly restructuring their rounds. And I think one of the many advantages of using Seed Legals is that we support a rolling close round. So what you can say is there might be a company that was, let's say, raising £300,000 and now they've been unable to complete the round. Maybe they've only raised £200,000 or even £100,000. Instead of aborting the round, they're rapidly restructuring it to I'm raising £100,000 and topping up another £200,000 later on. And so by having the tools to quickly modify your goals based on what you can get, then I see companies doing that en masse. And actually, so far, this has been a record month for us with companies quickly looking to close any open rounds. And I think the other thing is in the UK, we have a unique situation because most of the UK early stage funding scene is fueled by angel investment, and angel investors get what's called SEIS and EIS tax deductions. So here they can write off some of their tax from their investment. And so if they invest £50,000, they can deduct £25,000 from their tax. And that runs to the April 5th tax year. So if the shares are issued before April 5th, investors can get their discounts in this tax year. So actually, there's always been a great imperative for companies to close their rounds now. And now what's quite interesting is the combination of I need to close quickly before people's, you know, panic. And number two, if you close now, you can get your tax deductions in this tax year. And people are putting the combination of those two to restructure rounds from I wanted to raise this much, you know, sometime in the next couple of months to actually I'm going to raise this much and close it right now and then top up later.
So Are you saying that funding still is available? You alluded in one of the sentences to, in the medium term, fundraising can be difficult.
Right. So that's a great point. And I think we might, and of course, I don't know the answer. And actually, we've got a large number of rounds on Seed Legals, and we've got fantastic data. And I'm actually, over the coming days, going to run the numbers to see, are people mostly restructuring their rounds, or are rounds decreasing in size, or the rate at which they're closing changing? But I think you might put things into maybe three or four buckets. Number one is, I had a round or have a round in progress now, and I've got some of the round covered. What should I do? Should I wait for more, or should I close now? Number two is, I'm going to run out of money in the next few months. What should I do? And number three, I've no idea what business is going to be like over the next year. I've got cash in the bank for 6, 9, 12 months, but how should I optimize between growth and expenditure? And really, at Seed Legals, we're fortunate and privileged to be in the third category. We have still, in fact, almost all of the funds available from our last fundraise. We don't have a huge burn rate. And now we've got the challenge of, you know, do we go crazy and hire people, particularly as people are calling us going, hey, I'm available, and increase our burn rate? Or do we take a more conservative view? And, you know, we don't need to be anywhere near reducing our team size, but should we cut non-essential services? Should we not hire? Should we scale back? And it's difficult to say. You know, what I have told my team is, I remember seeing somewhere that, you know, one of those cartoons of the boardroom, and the CEO is saying, hey, team, we're in a recession. We're going to cut sales. We're going to cut marketing. And guess what? You know, 3 months later, hey, sales are down. Well, how come they're down? It's because you cut everything. So it's a difficult one to decide what to do long term. But that's not what is troubling most people today. Most people have a much shorter runway. Early stage startups are often, you know, in a stage where they don't yet have revenue. And so if they don't raise funding, then they're going to run out of money. And there, I think what's quite useful is, you know, to think, if you have 1 month of runway left and you reduce your costs by 50%, you're buying yourself one more month. If you have 12 months of runway left and you cut your costs by 50%, you're buying yourself another 12 months. And that means, if you see that you aren't going to have enough funding available and you don't have revenue, or your burn rate is quite high, you might want to look to aggressively make at least some cost reductions, rather than waiting till much later, because reducing 50% with 1 month left doesn't make any difference. You need to act earlier.
That sounds still quite general. I'm trying to get a grip on how bad has this outbreak of the virus really hit the community already. Do you have a sense there? Maybe some percentages or some anecdotal stories?
I don't have enough data yet. I think obviously it varies greatly by different companies. And I think you might think super early stage companies, which don't really have a massive burn rate, the founders are funding it or paying themselves. I think it's somewhat business as usual. They're just going to make sure they don't spend money. I think early stage companies that had an idea and have got some people on board and were waiting to close their next funding round, if they are investable, then I think that is not a big problem. If they really had a location-based or a business area that is affected, then clearly an investor is going to be hard-pressed to invest in a travel business at this point, because it's going to be months until that picks up again. So then the question is, how do companies rapidly pivot so that, I mean, what I love is humankind's ingenuity, the speed at which people are adapting. My favorite is a food delivery company. They deliver a lot of food to offices, and obviously no one's in an office anymore, but they've now picked up and it's changed to food delivery at home, and they're so busy they're not taking orders at the moment, and their web traffic looks a bit like Zoom's web traffic. So, you know, when I first saw the work from home and we had to suspend our delivery from them, I felt really bad. They just closed their round on Seed Legals, and I felt bad to pause. And then when I went to use their service myself, I was completely delighted to see they were so busy, I couldn't even order. So I think, you know, how will people reinvent themselves? And obviously some areas are going to be much easier. What I'm really intrigued is all the people running physical events, how fast they're changing to virtual events, and some will be easier and some will be a lot more difficult to be able to achieve that. So the short answer is I don't yet have enough information to say how badly people are hurting. I would say probably about half of all funding rounds are affected, with some number of investors being slow or bailing, but those companies changing their funding round to reduce the amount they're raising and close now. I don't know how many aren't closing at all, and I don't yet know how many people are using or planning to use the new government initiatives that are in most countries about paying people or suspending people on some pay and so on. And I think that is what I think many startups will be looking as their hopeful savior to tide them over this period. But my caution is it might be a false hope. So some of the loan initiatives might only work for companies that are have a revenue base, otherwise the bank still won't lend the money. And the ones where you furlough your team, that means they go, well, they're home already, but they paid by the government, but they paid to not work. So the problem then is, great, they're off your books, but they're not doing anything useful and they're at home and they have nothing to do. So, you know, that seems clearly of some benefit, but it creates some other side issues. And I don't know what the answer is there.
I noticed that you responded very, very fast to the crisis. And you provided, for example, free working from home policies on your website. If I understand it right, you developed this originally for your own company, of course, and then you made it available to the community. What motivated you to do that?
So I think it's actually really interesting. You know, as a founder, when you start a business, you just think about the technical piece and the upside. And then you have people using you. And then you have people, wonderful people, dependent on you. And then you wake up in the morning and you find that actually your course of action isn't as freeform as it once was, because people are dependent on you. And you might think about, you know, an airplane manufacturer. It's all cool, they're engineering, we're going to make a cool airplane. And one day you wake up and there are people traveling on your airplane, and suddenly the failure of the airplane is not an option. And what I found on Seed Legals is, you know, we started, it was all fun and games, legal document automation. It's the bubble of startup communities. It's awesome. You know, complete your round faster. But now we started getting calls from founders who had done rounds on Seed Legals and now, you know, with their business distressed, they have less revenue, they need to lay off people and they need help. And our model is always unlimited support, all included. When we wake up, actually, we suddenly discover, I didn't think about this when we started the business, that we actually have this heavy hand of a social responsibility and we have to actually act accordingly. And maybe it's a variant of the do no evil, it's the attempt to do good. So what I've always liked to do in our business is, as we solve problems for ourselves as a growing business, how can we do all of those in a scalable way? How can we make what we've created available to others as well? And so when we created this work from home policy for ourselves, we decided, well, we'll make it available, in this case, for free. We're now working our legal team on understanding the furlough payments from the government and others. And we're also in discussions with some industry groups that are looking to create government loans for startups, where the loans might be done with similar type of legal agreements that are already done on Seed Legals. And if 1,000 companies need these loans, actually one way or another, between that and a large number of founders calling us, you know, I need to lay off somebody or my round has changed, not responding and not helping is really not an option. And so it's a combination of, I guess I always like to be opportunistic and maybe slightly contrarian, but actually we find ourselves now with a social conscience that we have to deliver on as well.
And what role did your board play in this process?
A fascinating question. So I think the board is going to get involved in many different ways. So my view of a board, a well-functioning board, is that a company essentially a pyramid of governance. So individuals in the company, employees can make certain decisions. And then certain decisions need to be made by a manager and certain by the CEO and above that, certain by the board. And then some need investor consent. And so for me, a board is always a way of sharing the risk and rewards. And so, you know, as a CEO, if I want to buy a new kettle, I can freely do it. If I want to hire somebody for £20,000 salary, I can do that. If I want to hire someone for £200,000 salary, actually that needs board approval, because you do that too many times, you're going to run out of money. So with the board, your goal with the board is to agree, and we have investors on our board, what should be our strategy? You know, should we scale? Should we cut back? Should we change what we do? Should we give things away for free? And what I like is that strategy of getting together with the board. You don't know what is the right or wrong answer, but you share the risks and rewards. Now, sometimes boards play out other ways. Sometimes a business has tough decisions to make. Maybe the founders and the investors have different viewpoints. The investors want to shut the company, and the founders, it's their business and their livelihood. You know, you may find different game plans at different stages of a company. But in our case, we're fortunate and privileged to have a growing company with revenue. And so our board is going to be all about, well, how might this change our projections for the year? Should we launch in a new country? Should we not? And again, it's the shared risk reward. If our investors have invested in us because they want a 3x year-on-year growth, but actually, if we cut back on hiring and cut back on sales and marketing, it's not going to be 3x at the end of the year, it will be less. How do we get in sync on that and jointly make those decisions?
I mean, this is a tough environment also mentally at the moment for some people, working from home, dealing with children. As a founder, what did you find particularly helpful, what your board is currently doing? How is the board supporting you in this current situation?
Well, I think the first thing is I know that they're there to support me. Maybe the second thing is they're not taking too much of my time. They're not jumping on daily meetings and defocusing me. I think in many cases, I spend a lot of time with my co-founder working out the risk and rewards between us. And sometimes we see things from a different way. I might look to give things away free, and he might look to make sure we have a viable business. And that interplay is often very important. And I think really what's interesting is I look to myself when things are going well, life is easy. But actually you look to, you know, discover real leadership when things are not going well. And how do you, when your team suddenly, you know, we've got 50 plus people at Seed Legals, I've built a team that lives and works and plays, it doesn't live in the office, but you know, we're all in the office, and I love a team that is all together in the office. Come last Monday, nobody's in the office. What do we do? How do we reinvent ourselves? We have, for example, a Monday morning team stand up on Zoom, and we try to over communicate. On Fridays, we've got a lunch and Zoom. So actually last Friday, I was going to make pancakes, but there were no eggs, but I've got eggs. So this Friday, you know, the CEO is making pancakes live on air. And the rules are you have to eat lunch and you can't talk about work. And we set up a grid array of everyone. And last Friday, which was amazing. So how can we have other events? So we have a Strava, you know, everyone who goes running or whatever can now compete with each other, but, you know, self-isolated. So I think it's a combination of, as a founder, you know, working with your board and working with your team to reinvent your company, to work from home and to work in a way that taps into whatever you can opportunistically find as good from whatever environment exists at the time.
Fantastic. I think that's very, very helpful and great insights for other founders, how you reinvent it and how quickly you adapt to the situation.
And I must say personally, that's one thing I really like doing. What I always like to do as a startup is figure out, you know, firstly, of course, what your customers or users want. And secondly, how can you have an advantage over your competitors in a sense? So my competitors are to some degree law firms. I know that their systems are not set up for remote working. I know we're an online platform. We correspond with our customers using web chat and Zoom already. For me, that's an immediate advantage. Secondly, my time to execute is super fast anyway. We like to try and figure out the least amount of time from an idea to execution. And so, for example, in the UK, The HMRC, the tax department, periodically change the rules. And we like to see what's the minimum time from discovering that to enhancing our product to see how we can help people who had otherwise been affected and certainly inform them. So for me, this wasn't exactly business as usual because it's much more significant, but people need help. We figured it out. What's the soonest we can do to provide a solution?
Fantastic. One question that is very close to my heart is, of course, the topic of board evaluations. So in contrast to listed organizations, I realize only a few boards of startups or growth companies actually make use of a board evaluation. What do you think has to happen that startups and growth companies really make greater use of board evaluations?
So define what you mean by board evaluation.
As you know, any listed organization in the UK has to do an external board evaluation every 3 years. And in the years in between, company secretaries are basically doing a questionnaire approach to see how is the board working together, feeding it back and helping the board to develop to become more effective.
So the fact that I asked you the question clearly means that we're not doing
absolutely.
That. And I think that probably in the case of many startups, the board is a little different to later stage companies. So in startups, you'd probably find two or three types of board composition. Composition number one is they're a group of founders and they just happen to be the board because they are the directors. They didn't think of themselves as the board, but they are the board. A variant two is they've appointed some advisor, so it looks good on the pitch deck, and so they've now got a non-exec director on the board. And thing three is as part of an investment, an investor gets a board right, and they're now on the board. I think many startups go from it's just the founders, and clearly they're not going to bother evaluating themselves because they're married anyway. Mm-hmm. And with the investor, if the investors get an investor director right, there's no point evaluating them because they're there whether you like it or not. So it probably is more appropriate for later stage companies where they do need to have more people on the board for a range of fiduciary or, you know, company planning or diversity or other reasons. And there, the board members are really discretionary. And now you need to make sure, and of course, there for the company governance. And now you want to make sure that, you know, as I said, that sort of shared risk and reward to me would be a good board. But a board can also find itself in a position where the investors are the police and the cops and robbers and the founders are the bad guys, or there's a fundamental mismatch. And there you can find lots of things blocked.
I mean, I spoke with many VC firms, and you're right, at later stage companies, they have boards in place, but very few VCs would actually think that the boards are really effective and really adding great value to the value creation process. Many believe that the boards are maybe selected for other reasons than really their value add contribution, and a lot has to do to step up the performance of the board.
So I agree. And by the way, there's a blog post or an article by me on the Seed Legal site in the resources area about how much equity to give to advisors and board members. And we've leveraged data to show. So, but my view is that I think founders often overestimate the value of advisors and advisor board members. Investors or others will say, yeah, we'll help you. We'll do intros and all these sorts of things. I'd like 5% equity in the business. And so my advice is, number one, if you are going to give a board member or an advisor equity, figure that out as a how much the equity would be worth in the pounds or dollars. So if your company has a £1 million valuation and the investor wants 5%, that's £50,000 you're giving them to be a director to come along one day a month. And so £50,000 for one day a month, well, I could hire a developer for the same amount. Yeah. I should really maybe much better off spending the money on a developer. But if I can reduce it to the equivalent of £10,000 and have it vest over 2 years, £5,000 a year, you know, person who's done this before, maybe the numbers are right. So, you know, my message is one, don't jump in and buy into too soon an investor saying all the value they're going to provide. Number two, if you do give them equity, equate it to a value in pounds or dollars. And number three, always make sure that it can vest over a period of years, so that if they don't perform, they can be out. And number four, create an NED, a non-exec director agreement, so that you can terminate them if it's not providing value. Because the last thing you want is a non-performing board that's gridlocked and you can't get rid of them. Then the company really has problems.
Fantastic, Anthony. Thank you ever so much. Thank you for your contribution to the startup scene. I hope it goes well. I hope many in the startup scene will listen to this podcast and draw on your advice. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Enjoy. Thank you. And any questions, you know, you can just head over to the seedlegals.com website and hit the chat bubble. And, you know, if we can help, we would be delighted to.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Anthony.
Thank you. Good talking.
Good talking. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
You heard Anthony saying, what is a board evaluation? Well, we are working with leading venture capital firms and private equity firms and larger startups. If you want to start a discussion, please do get in touch. How can we help you and your boards? We at Better Boards are delighted to hear from you. You can best reach us on info@better-boards.com. Stay well, stay healthy.